and it'll be a real pleasure to be able to sponsor this meeting. And with your pen drives, it's my understanding that presentations will be up on the IFSC website, and you can download them in your own time. It takes a long time for us to communally, I think, and they only arrived at 12 o'clock this afternoon. Actually, I'm going to talk about sports and fitness drinks rather than anything drinks, and I think that's probably just as well because that was covered in quite a lot of detail in the previous session. And although my area is scientific and regulatory affairs, we've also heard quite a lot about regulation. So I'll kind of just touch on the regulation side, which I think restates the earlier point. So I guess that's good that we as a company in agreement with a legal company that advises other companies. And I'll more focus on kind of some of the product side of things and more the product attribute side of things. What I'll cover essentially then is just a few facts about Coca-Cola, because you might be wondering, you know, how a company that has the iconic brand Coca-Cola is involved in sports products, apart from the fact, of course, that we are the official sponsor of the Olympics, and I think have done so through pretty much all of the 20th century in the modern games, and are one of the longest sponsors of the Olympics. I can't help but just touch on the regulatory side of things and the physiological needs and our portfolio of products. So it's probably fairly evident that we are, as the Coca-Cola company, the number one company in sparkling beverages in the world. It's maybe not quite so obvious that we are actually the number one juice and juice drink company in the world. Not so much in the UK as in other countries, but we do in fact have a 51% share in Innocent as well now, who are doing exceptionally well in not from concentrate juices at the moment, along with their smoothies that they've been doing for a while, which is they're excited about it, we're excited about it, it's working really well. We're also number one in the world in ready-to-drink coffee, and this really staggered someone the other day when we were talking about tea. We're also number one in ready-to-drink tea products in the world. We have a very strong presence in China and some of these other countries where tea drinking is obviously a great tradition. We're number two in sports drinks, but that's the products that I'll talk about today, obviously. And we're number three in packaged waters. We do have more than 3,500 beverage products throughout the world. So if you think Coca-Cola Company is about one product, then I shatter that illusion right here and there. So what's important when you're innovating in the sports sector? Well, the first thing, and not that much has been said about this, but I suppose it's obvious. It's obvious if you're making a product that's 100% complete and balanced, but it also is the same on sports drinks. If a product doesn't taste good, then people don't choose to use it, and it doesn't give the functionality that you're hoping for. And whilst it probably isn't the number one priority on sports drinks, it's still incredibly important. Functionality, of course, is important, and that's the area that I'll major on in this session. But I'll also just illustrate that not all sports are alike. So you can't just talk about a sports product. There's a huge diversity of products that are required to meet all needs. And of course, the endorsement also carries weight with whether it's with athletes or with more what I would call aspiring athletes. And we look to cater for both of those groups. So we're extremely proud of our relationship with elite athletes. But what we hope, and through sponsorship of the Olympics, for example, is that we will inspire people to be more active and have more interest in sports and live healthy, balanced lifestyles. So the endorsements can certainly add credibility and weight. So this is, in effect, now, at the end of the day, something of a recap. But we've heard all about the nutrition and health claims regulations, that they lay down specific requirements around nutrition claims. That's a content claim. and also around health claims, the benefits that an inclusion of an ingredient can bring. And these are the Article 13.1 claims. And then we've also heard that the Article 13.5 claims exist but aren't particularly relevant to this sector. However, we also, right now, have the Parnuts Directive. The fact that a directive means that it isn't necessarily followed the same way in all countries. That's the nature of a directive, and there are national interpretations, even more than there would be with a regulation. And the Foods for Particular Nutritional Needs Directive provides for foods which have particular uses, such as baby foods, dietetic food, but also has included for a significant amount of time sports foods. For sports foods, under the jurisdiction, if you like, of Parnuts, it provides a clear framework for the composition of sports foods and drinks, which have been laid down by the Scientific Committee on Food report. And people in the sports food area just refer all the time to this SCF report, and that's what they're referring to. And so that's meant that the Parnuts kind of sat on top of the nutrition and health claims regulation, and have allowed us to say things about sports foods, which a food, if it wasn't specially designed for a special group of people, wouldn't have allowed us to do. So you could say that during sports it's better to consume a sport drink because it contains, for example, a small amount of sodium. But it was announced in February of 2011 that the sports foods will most likely be removed from Parnuts and will therefore fall under normal foods and will be regulated in the same way as all other foods. Now, it's clear to say that it's true to say that the future of Parnuts is still under great debate. So right now, we still live in a world where Parnuts is active for sports foods, and you need to think about that and the nutrition and health claims regulation. And how that is going to pan out, we really don't know right now. But Food Drink Europe, which is the main trade association for food and drink companies in Europe, formerly known as CIAA, which is a French word, which apparently no one can get their head around, so it's now Food Drink Europe, and other trade bodies, are requesting that while the vertical legislation, which was the Parnuts legislation, may not govern sports foods, we would hope that the horizontal legislation, such as the Nutrition and Health Claims Regulation, would allow to communicate effectively to a group who actually do have special needs. And a great example of this is 15% of the RDA of minerals to make claims. So actually, contrary to the point that was being made earlier about vitamin C, for example, which you might need in really high levels, for hydration purposes, you actually need a relatively small amount of sodium. And if you put 15% in, that's far more than you need for hydration purposes. It's going to taste pretty horrible, and at the end of the day, you want to have not too much sodium, because there can be negatives of that. So if we lose Parnuts and we lose the ability to put in small amounts of sodium and not talk about them, then it makes it very difficult. And for all of those people who picked up Powerade Zero, you will note that we don't talk about sodium and potassium, even though those are ingredients, because that doesn't come up under Parnuts regulation, because it doesn't meet the SCF report, and therefore we can't talk about those small amounts because it comes under nutrition and health claims reg. And therefore the challenge becomes, does a product that traditionally was Parnuts and isn't any longer not lose that ability to communicate? And we would argue that it's not about misleading people, it's about communicating an appropriate level for the benefit that you're trying to deliver. And we would look to see that protected under the new regime, whatever that might be. So that's the regulation side. Then we have the physiological needs. And we as a business are about making sports drinks. So I won't touch on supplements, I won't touch on foods. This is all about drinks. And really, there are three key principles that you're looking to with sports drinks. And those are providing fuel for your muscles, staying hydrated, and promoting optimum recovery. This is just some examples of the amount of calories per hour that you burn doing various sports. And I can see it. You probably can't see it from where you are. But some sports, such as running in the middle here, you're using, you know, kind of 1,000 calories per hour, whereas other sports, such as aerobics, for example, which is what most people do at the gym, is maybe just over 400 an hour. As the proud owner of beach volleyball tickets for the Olympics, I'll be watching the ladies in maybe minuscule, maybe not minuscule, bikinis, burn not much more than 400 kilocalories an hour as well. So you can see that there's a vast range in the amount of energy that's required for those sports. Essentially, your body has got different fuels that it's going to rely on during a period of exercise. And the amount of fuel that is used during the exercise depends on the type of exercise, as we've seen, the training intensity. So at the Olympics, the volleyballers might do a bit more than that. How long you do it for, and also the frequency of the training session. And that's going to drive how much fuel you require. So if you do 60 to 90 minutes of an endurance training, that's really going to seriously deplete your carbohydrate muscle stores. And also we know that if you want to perform at your best for endurance type activities, then carbohydrate loading will be incredibly important. So there are clearly benefits of fueling, and these can both enhance performance and delay fatigue setting in and help you recover more quickly. So fueling for those sorts of sports is really important. So I'll move on to hydration. One of the key things, and it's often talked about to athletes, is that thirst alone is not a good indicator of hydration needs. So thirst cuts in later than actually your need to start rehydrating. And you lose fluid and electrolytes when you sweat. Of course, women don't sweat, I think they glow. in this modern world where we all do exercise, then even women, we're allowed to talk about them sweating. But the key electrolyte in sweat is sodium. And so both fluid and sodium need to be replaced to maintain adequate hydration. There can also be an increase in fatigue if you do become dehydrated, because inadequate fluid and sodium makes your heart work harder and the exercise feels more difficult. And one of the things that we know, and this is especially true of people who are more the aspiring athletes, people who are doing it as to make them for health benefits, to make them feel better, for general fitness, tonus, this sort of thing, is if you feel knackered, you don't tend to exercise. And by hydrating properly, you will stop that fatigue being felt. And that's a really, really important thing. Dehydration also impairs mental performance as well. So if you're doing one of the pentathletes or one of these things where you've got some shooting of arrows and these precision things to do, if you're not really alert, you could have a nasty little accident there. So mental performance also important. And then clearly, in a hot environment, the drop in performance can be a real problem and dehydration increases. And I did have a picture of Paula Radcliffe sat at the side of the road, but I had to take it out because it's too depressing to even remember that episode. So again, not all sports are the same. And different sports drive different sweat losses. Running, again, is a high one. Cycling is surprisingly low on sweat. And I can't believe that cricket actually requires more than cycling. But that must be fast bowling. That's not spinners, is it? Anyway, the key point is that sodium is incredibly important, and it has lots of roles to play. One of which is maintaining the desire to drink. So if you consume something that's got a slight saltiness to it, it there's the taste side of it, but also physiologically it drives you to want to drink. But the key thing really is that you hold on to more of the water. So you want the water to be absorbed into the system and Yeah, if we're talking basics here, we don't want to lose it in sweat, but we don't want to lose it through urination either. So you want your body to hold on as much to that hydration as it can. So when training hard, when sweating profusely, the ideal beverage may not be plain water. And adding carbohydrates for fuel and electrolytes for the hydration and also flavour is going to be beneficial. So in terms of the waters versus sport drinks, and a few of you have asked this upstairs today, if you are exercising hard and sweating hard, water isn't enough. And although it is a great thirst quencher, it isn't the ideal rehydrator in these situations. So it doesn't give the sports benefits. It doesn't give the flavour. And this is really important. The thirst shuts down too quickly before you finish doing the rehydration process. And flavour may seem a minor point, but it really is true, and the research demonstrates it, that if you have a lightly sweetened and lightly flavoured drink, it does actually encourage you to drink more. And when you're in a situation where you're really up against it and consuming fluid is not the first thing that you really want to be doing, if it has that sweetness and it has that flavour to it, it will encourage that higher consumption and better hydration. So in terms of the need during exercise, you're looking to match the sweat and urine losses, and similar considerations that we had on the fueling. It depends just on what you're doing. And essentially, isotonic sports drinks are preferred for endurance-based exercises, which is considered to be more than 60 minutes. So a lot is talked about isotonic and hypertonic and hypertonic to a lesser extent. But in those cases, isotonic drinks are the good all-rounders because they will give you fuel and hydration, whereas hypertonic really is only doing the hydration piece, and hypertonic is really not so much about hydration, and that's about fuel and recovery. Oops, that was about 3 minutes ago. I don't know why I did that. So Paradigm 4, which is our mainstream product, is an isotonic product. It fits in with the SCF report, so it's got the right amount of carbohydrates, sodium to keep the fluid in the system, the right amount of energy to keep you topped up but not overload you, and also the isotonic osmolality. In terms of the Powerade Zero, this is the one that I said doesn't mention about the minerals. It's not a sports drink. It doesn't fit the SCF report requirements. It's a zero-sugar, calorie-free fitness drink. So it's really aimed at those people who are going to the gym to tone up, feel better, do the right thing. But actually, they're probably only exercising for 45 minutes, probably is a reasonably low intensity. They're not sweating a huge amount, and they definitely don't want to load back the calories on. So it's all about maintaining a fitness level of hydration without adding back the calories. And this is not a product that many of you will be familiar with, but those who are deeply into the sports side of things probably have heard of. It's Powerade Pro, which we provide to elite athletes as a non-commercial activity. There will be a lot of it going to London in a few weeks' time, and we'll basically supply it to any pro athletes who ask for it. And it was developed in association with the Olympic Medical Institution for the Athens Olympics, which was an incredibly hot Olympics. I don't think we're probably going to have anything like that in London, but still a very useful product and very much liked by pro athletes. And it's something that you can actually dilute in a bottle for your own purposes, and it provides excellent hydration. And as I say, it's a non-commercial product, but it's being used by lots of pro athletes. First, mainly initially in the UK, but now around Europe and potentially wider. And it's been very good at growing credibility with the pro athlete community for us. So in summary, the needs of elite sport people and recreational athletes clearly cover a great breadth of territory. And if you bear the three things in mind, purely hydration and recovery, then you can find a combination of sports drinks that will work for you. The regulatory environment has really supported sports drinks, but it's changing, and the communication of benefits to what I would consider is a specialist group of consumers potentially may be eroded. The other thing to say is we're seeing it in non-sports products across all categories, that as soon as a new regulation comes in, claims get much more scrutinised. So for those companies that have claimed out there for a long time, I would suggest you re-look at them, either under the Nutrition and Health Claims Regulation or under Parnuts as it stands right now. But think about what's going to happen if Parnuts goes, because things aren't going to change. And innovation in this portfolio is a lot about physiological function. But the credibility that comes with providing products to athletes who are then seen to succeed is a great inspiration for all the athletes inside us. And don't undervalue the taste and the physical attributes, you know, what the mouthfeel is, whether you can physically get it down you when you're cycling along at 40 kilometres an hour. And I just have one of the adverts to show right at the end here, just to demonstrate what we hope will inspire people this summer.
Yeah, really.
You'll lose more than water when you sweat. Powerade Iron 4 hydrates better than water by replenishing fuel and minerals. Hydrating the 2012 Olympic athletes.
Okay.